Blog Talk Radio.
And good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Brendan Cunningham calling in to you on Blog Talk Radio's Real Estate is Cool show. You can call us. Give us a buzz, 563-999-3066. We'll talk about all things that are cool in real estate, some things that are not cool. But either way, we're here for the next 30 minutes, 29 minutes or so. We're going to talk to you about real estate. What's happening out there? It's cool. Crazy. Okay, now, having said that, we are headed into an important weekend because we're coming up on Memorial Day weekend. Memorial Day weekend is probably, I think, the most American holiday that we have. I know we have 4th of July, which is really all about Independence Day and how we broke away from Mother England. But Memorial Day is really when we get to celebrate and salute those that make our country what it is and make it sustain itself. And I was listening to one of my favorite radio hosts this morning, David Bellavia, Medal of Honor winner, who works in the local Buffalo markets in 716 land. And he had a guest on. And he said, you know, I used to be embarrassed when I would say to somebody, or they would say to me, happy Memorial Day, because he was a veteran. And he said, yeah, he says, I always thought, well, there's nothing happy I shouldn't be celebrating. I mean, I lost a lot of friends, you know, in various foreign wars and all this. But he's since come to terms. I think coming to terms is an interesting phrase, because as you get older, you come to terms with a lot of things. Your successes as well as your failures in life and things that maybe you were remiss to observe or comment on. But he said, you know what? Yeah, it really is a happy Memorial Day because we had people that came before us and that still continue to go out and pay the ultimate price on foreign soil so that we can have hot dogs on the weekend. We're celebrating the American way. And I recently wrote on our own blog about this coming day of, or this coming weekend of Memorial Day. And, you know, it's very meaningful to me. My entire family served in various aspects of World War II or Korea or Vietnam. And I had a number of award medal winners. My father had a Purple Heart, fought in North Africa during World War II. Yeah, these guys, they fought to give us this life that we call America here. And it's why people are storming the borders right now. They want to come here because we have such a wonderful thing in this great experiment of the United States. And one of the reasons why people come here, and for all the reasons that were drafted into the Declaration of Independence, which is life, liberty, and here's the phrase, the pursuit of happiness. That's why people are coming here. They want that pursuit of happiness. Now, what was interesting about the pursuit of happiness, that was not the original phrase in the document. The original phrase in the document was life, liberty, and property. Because the founding fathers knew that when you owned property, everything changed. People became better citizens because they took care of their property. They had pride of ownership. They had a piece of the action. They had a piece of the dirt. My own grandfather had a dream, which I got to realize for him, that he always wanted to own a farm. It was an old Irish thing. All the Irish that came here, 17,000 which died in the sea, by the way, making the crossing. And they weren't all greeted all that well when they got here. But he had the desire that all the Irish had that came here. They wanted to have a piece of land. They wanted to have something that they could call their own. And that's why we were seeing all the people storming the southern border. It's no different. My relatives came here looking for a better life, looking for to own a piece of the pie, a piece of that puzzle. So, you know, as I wrote in my blog column, I said, you know, make sure you say thank you to a veteran, whether they served or they're still serving, they're on active duty. Make sure you thank them. Make sure you salute the police that are out there having a tough job and not getting any respect. Give them a good, strong, supportive thumbs up when you see them. Say, hey, thanks for doing a great job. I'm sorry you guys are having a tough time right now. Because they are. I mean, nobody wants to be a cop anymore. I mean, there used to be the line would be around the block for people to take the test, and no one seems to want to do that anymore. So now they're lowering the standards, they're doing this, they're doing that, just to get people to sign up, because they've made it not a popular job. They're paying through the nose to get people to join up. So the cops, 99.99%, and these are the good guys, man. They're trying to protect us from a lot of the bad things that are going on out there. But make sure you say thank you to those guys. And the first responders, oh, my gosh. I have a first responder in my family, and she just posted something on Facebook saying, today, 9 years ago, I delivered my first baby as a first responder. I said, you know what? Here's the person that really gets to change the world for the better, right, wrong, or indifferent. I mean, they're really on the front line. So make sure you say thank you to those people. These are the people that make America great. Not make America great again, but make America great. And, you know, if we're going to go make it great again, I don't know if we're going to do that or not, but either way, make sure you take time out to salute the veterans and all the people that make for a better life in the United States. So that's my Memorial Day sermonette, which you all needed to listen to, whether you wanted to or not. All right, so Brendan Cunningham is here telling you, give us a call. We want to talk to you. Now, one of the things we also talk about a lot is when people want to buy real estate. You know, buying real estate, I tell all the agents that come to us that are brand new, I say, listen, here's the deal. Your job is to teach buyers how to buy and sellers how to sell. And by the way, they're all going to think that they know more than you do. And sometimes they do. Most of the time they don't. But one thing is really tangibly important, and that is real estate transaction. All real estate transactions are local. They're all local. All real estate is, even though you can look at listings in Italy and France and South Carolina right now, because everything's online, or most things are online. Real estate tends to not tend. It's a local business, and the transactions are all local. And the way we do business locally is very different from the way they do it in Florida. Heck, you can close a transaction in Florida 2 weeks. Bingo, bango, boom. Here, average time is probably 60 to 90 days. I'm not, you know, we can talk about why that is. The simple answer is it's a lawyer state, you know, and that's not to disparage lawyers, but when you have three lawyers that are trying to figure things out, it just takes them a while to do it. And typically, you'll have three lawyers in a transaction, especially in 716 land. Who were the three lawyers? Lawyer for the buyer, lawyer for the seller, and then there's probably going to be an attorney for the bank. Now, sometimes the bank can actually work with the buyer. Slight conflict of interest that's implied, but as long as people are okay with it, I don't think it's a big deal. I know if the attorney's representing the bank, he in theory is representing the bank's interest only. Well, generally speaking, the bank's interest is consistent with what the buyer's interest is. Generally speaking, there are caveats on that. Please don't, you know, blow my internet up and say, oh, what about this? What about this? There's always the what about this. But in the grand scheme of things, yeah, it's perfectly okay to have the guy represent the bank and the buyer as well. I don't know if you want to have them represent all three parties, but that's beside the point. But yeah, so typically what will happen is when we're dealing with a local transaction, you know, we have to fill in the usual terms on a contract. The usual terms on the contract are up here. They're really, it's an actual contract when we come to terms and we send it off to the attorney for their approval. And in the actual contract, it has all of the terms that are specified that will be important, you know, what the price is, what's included, what's not included, Is there going to be a home inspection? Are there any requests for zoning changes and all those things? And then, of course, we have this thing. If this person is applying for a mortgage, they're applying for a mortgage. How long are we going to give them to apply for a mortgage? If we're going to give them 45 days to apply for a mortgage, chances are they're probably going to close the transaction about 60 days or 70 days. So having said that, when we say there's a commitment date in the contract, that's what we call a drop-dead date. Make no mistake, that's a drop-dead date. If you don't have a mortgage payment by such and such a date, either party can cancel that transaction. However, there's another date in there. It's called the closing date. And then we drum this into people's heads left and right, and nobody ever gets it. So we try again. The closing date in the contract is 100% aspirational. It's a target date. It's a pregnancy date. It's not the actual date. We say this is the date we'd like to close. This date, at this time, at this place, or some other place that's mutually convenient or some other time that's mutually convenient, but it's just strictly a pregnancy date. You know, and the analogy I like to live is, you know, it's 9 months and you're delivering the day and it's the baby was due on, what's today? Today is the 23rd of May. The baby was due today and I don't know. It's not coming out today. It doesn't come out until tomorrow. So sometimes, you know, if you check into the hospital, I can remember my sister, she was in labor for like 42 hours, almost 2 days. So she checks into the hospital today at, say, what, 3 o'clock? Well, 7 hours. But now she's in the new date. Oh, it's too late. You didn't close on the right date. That's it. It's all over with. We don't want the baby now. That's not how it works. When the baby comes, the baby comes. So understand when you have a closing date in a real estate contract in 716 land, it is aspirational. It is not a drop-dead date like the commitment date was. It's aspirational. If it happens, great. If it doesn't happen, well, we'll make other arrangements. Now, if it doesn't happen on that date, we do want to know why. We should ask a few questions. What's the story? Do they have a mortgage amount? Well, they don't have a mortgage amount. Oh, well, they should have had that before we got here. See how it works? So when we work with buyers and sellers, we have to really go over a lot of the terminology, because what we think is common sense and we think people understand, they really don't. And it's not their fault. I mean, on the surface, closing date should mean, well, we close on this date. It's just that you have to read between the lines and say, oh, I see. It really isn't the closing date. Yeah, that's what it is. So that's one aspect of a real estate transaction that we talk about a lot, whether we want to or not. Because everyone wants to close as soon as they put their hard-earned money down. It's very funny. I want to close. Oh, what do you mean that I want to close? Ridiculous. Ridiculous. So I don't know what you think is going on in the real estate market right now. If you were to ask me, I'd say, hey, I don't know. There's a lot of moving parts to a real estate transaction. I mean, where are you interested in discussing? Are you interested in talking about buying or selling? Somebody interested in buying in 716 land, I would follow that up with a whole bunch of questions that said, well, where specifically are you buying? Somebody mentioned, oh, I want to look in this zip code, and I looked up, it's North Buffalo. North Buffalo, the hottest market probably anywhere in Western New York, anywhere, and priced accordingly. Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to buy something in North Buffalo last year, I would hazard the guess that last year, oh, my gosh, you would have probably paid 20, 25% less last year than you would this year. Yeah, we're seeing, you know, when we look at any time you look at an article, always figure out where the article was written. Was it from a syndicated column that originated from Los Angeles? When they're talking about real estate in Los Angeles, it's different from here. It's different. So you always want to break it down. What's going on here? And more specifically, when you say here, you mean really here. You know, I'm driving out to meet with a friend of mine. We're going to go out to the rifle range and shoot some trap tonight. And it's out in the hills of Boston. Now, what's going on in the hills of Boston, which is south of Orchard Park, is very different from what's going on in North Buffalo. I mean, it couldn't be more different. Things take longer to sell. Now, do they sell over the asking price in North? Probably. Do they sell over the asking price with the same vigor and ferocity that they will in North Buffalo? Probably not. But either way, we're seeing a really enigmatic market right now, especially when if someone's like, interest rates going up and prices are continuing to go up. That's sort of like an oxymoron. That shouldn't be. It should be the opposite way. And as I tell people, and I have a lot of buyers, I think the parade will have passed them by because they're not going to do what they need to do. And I can only do what I can do. But I have one buyer right now, and he's capped out at 180, and he wants to buy something that's probably closer to 280. And until he changes his wish list, nothing's going to happen because the interest rates are going up and the prices are going up. So the house that was 280 a month ago is going to be 290 next month. And he's stuck at 180. That's all he's qualified. It's all he's pre-approved for. He can't do more than that. So something has to give there. Now, if he had tried to get into the market 4 years ago, absolutely. He would have been all over it. But at this point, yeah, I think the parade may have passed him by. And unless he can find some more money from Uncle Seymour somewhere, I think he's kind of cooked. And a lot of people are going to get left behind. And people are saying, well, you know, that's not fair. It's what life is. Think about this for a second. We are living in Western New York, Buffalo area, 716. It's only one of the most affordable places in the United States to live. Only one of the most affordable and good quality of life. I mean, you could probably buy a house, and for all my friends in Detroit, don't get mad. You could probably buy a house in parts of Detroit for less money, but I don't know. I don't want to be in Detroit. Is it me? I just don't want to be in Detroit. It's just, I hear too many bad things about it. Although one of my favorite movies is Gross Point Blank, which is about Gross Point, Michigan, which is right just outside of Detroit. And Gross Point is a lovely, lovely suburb. But having said what I said, not being wanting to be in Detroit, we are only living in one of those the affordable places, most affordable places in Western New York. And we still have people that say, well, I can't afford to get in. I don't know what to tell you. I made it as good as it gets. Some people will always get left behind. That's just what it is. But think about this if you were from New York City. If you're in New York City and you're trying to buy a house for $180,000, I want you to think about this for a second. Even if you've never been to New York City, you've probably heard about New York City. What do you think the chance of finding anything for $180,000 is anywhere in that city? Anywhere. I would say, you know what? I don't think it exists. I really don't think. You might be able to buy. Years ago, I was selling parking spaces. They're probably about $180,000. And what did the parking space include? Two painted lines inside of a garage. And this is back in 85. I could have sold them all day long at any price because there were a limited number of them. Oh, and they had a maintenance fee. I don't know what the maintenance fee was for, but there was a maintenance fee. I mean, you got to sweep out those two lines. Crazy. And the maintenance fee was like $60 a month. 40 years ago. Crazy. Yeah, so, I mean, your average sale price in New York City, what we talk about here in terms of price, they don't even talk about that in terms of down payment. I mean, if you're thinking about buying a condo or something for $1 million and you're going to put down 20%, well, that's $200,000. So that's more than that guy that's looking to buy an entire house for $180,000. Actually, he's looking for a double, which is really wild because he's talking about each unit being $90,000. Yeah, so it's what it is. If you want to get in the market, we can show you how you can do it, even with a fast and furious market. One of the things that I tell people when they talk to me is, listen, they say, well, what do you do? I said, you know what? I'm in the real estate business. I help people buy and sell homes, but more specifically, I help sellers so that they don't leave money on the table, and I help buyers because I can help them find the hole in the market. Because there's a hole in every market. You just have to know where to look for it. But I say the hole. The hole means that there's more opportunities in that hole because there are things that got sort of stuck there. So when people say there's no inventory, there are houses out there. But you know what? There aren't as many houses, and you're going to have to recognize that there are some opportunities that are not so obvious. And that's the hole that I talk about. If you want to know more about the hole, you call me. I'll tell you. I'll give you my cell number. You can call me right now, 716-818-2526, 716-818-2526. That's the hot wire. You call me on that, and I will respond as soon as I can. I'm not going to respond right now because I'm on the air. And you can be on the air too if you wanted to be. You just have to call that magical number that I gave you, which is 563-999-3066. That's right. So, what are you going to do? You're going to sit on the sidelines and not buy a house? What's interesting is a lot of times when we talk to people, they'll reach out to us on our website, and they'll say, I'm really interested in this house. And then when you kind of say, well, I'm just kind of looking, they say, okay, fine, you're looking, that's great. Well, when do you think you're going to move? Oh, I'm not going to move. Probably they'll make something up because they really don't want to talk to you. I don't know why they go on the website. They say, well, I'm probably not going to move for 6 months to a year. Well, here's the deal. This is exactly, the real estate market is exactly like digging a well. When do you dig a well? When you're thirsty or when you know you're going to need water? See, if you're digging the well when you're thirsty, you probably will die because it's too late. If you dig a well when you know you're going to need water, well, I know I'm going to need water about 6 months from now. So you start digging the hole now. If you're looking for a house, you got to start now looking for a house because, first of all, it's going to take you a couple of days, weeks, or maybe even months to get you what we call your ducks in a row. One, not only do you have to go look for houses, but, hey, you have to assemble your team. You have to find an agent. You have to have an attorney in line because you're going to have an attorney. Legally, you're not required to have an attorney. However, if you want to buy a house through me or through any sane real estate agent and you say, and I'm not going to use an attorney, I'm going to represent myself, they should do what we call an RUN. Do you know what an RUN is? They should run. They should run faster than the flash and get away from you because you're going to get yourself in trouble. I can do this. I can figure this out for myself, and I would never do it without an attorney. Never, ever, ever put another line under that, ever. It's just not a thing. It would be like asking me to remove my appendix. I guess I could all by myself. It's just not going to happen because I don't want to die of sepsis. No, I want to have my appendix when it's time to remove my appendix and when I remove in a hospital with a doctor who's got all the right equipment. So having said that, it takes a while to get your ducks in a row. And while you're getting your ducks in a row, getting pre-approved from a bank, the calendar is ticking while you're doing that. Oh, and then you're looking at some houses. Some of the houses you're going to look at, you're not going to like. So it's a whole process. So when somebody says, well, when are you looking to move? And you say 6 months, you're right on schedule. We got to start now to do that. If you think you're going to go out and buy a house in a year and start working like the month before, you are delusional, absolutely delusional. It takes time. I worked with a buyer recently. It took him a year to find a house. We looked at a lot of houses. But the point is, all of the ducks in a row. She was ready to pull that trigger when the first opportunity came up that made sense. She put a couple of offers in on properties that didn't go just as well. Wasn't meant to be. But when she was finally ready to pull the trigger, she was ready to pull the trigger. She got a house. And I drove past the other day. And it was just delightful. I said, oh, my God, it's one of the nicest houses on the street. It was a nice house before, but now it's even nicer. So that being said, so understand the timelines here. If you think that you're going to just throw something together in a week or two, not happening. It's a long-term process. And as I would like to explain to a lot of our listeners and the people that I work with, this is the year to do it, guys. This is the year to really buy a house. If you're not going to get in this year, it's just going to be that much harder next year and that much harder the year after that. And I've been saying it for so long that, you know, when I lived in New York City and I was selling real estate, I told people, I said, there's going to come a point where you will not be able to get in. Now, not being able to get in could have been 10, 20, 30 years ago. But now, I mean, it's virtually impossible. Unless, God forbid, you're a cocaine dealer or something like that. I don't know how you get in. I mean, I just don't. I mean, first-time buyer, somebody better leave you a lot of money. And then, of course, you do what you need to do in terms of being able to afford a home. So what do? Is, and this is one of the reasons why Buffalo is such an attractive area to live, well, you just keep driving further and further away from the city center so that instead of having a 10-minute commute, you know, have a 20-minute commute. Yeah, good luck on that. No one's got a 20-minute commute in New York City, unless they're taking the subway or walking. Okay? But the average poor schmo that has to live, say, 30 miles outside of the city, which is a reasonable number, depending on which direction they're going to go in, whether it's over to New Jersey or up to Westchester or out on Long Island, that 30 miles could translate as a two-hour ride every day. I used to feel so sorry for these poor, these poor bastards that would have to ride in on the Long Island Railroad from Babylon or something like that, and it would take them an hour and a half just on the Long Island Railroad. And the train was expensive even when I was there. Now I can't imagine what it must be. But, yeah, so they would take the train in, then they'd get off at Penn Station, then they'd have to go on a subway. I mean, by the time they finished with the transit, and they were looking at a two-hour ride each way and paying for their nose. So that's what you do. In Western New York, I'm amazed that people aren't beating our doors down trying to get into something. Because we have a 20-minute commute in any direction that you want to go. You don't like the pricing? Just drive a little bit further out. And what do you have to, 20, 25 minutes? East Aurora, 22 minutes. Oh, gee. Alden. Wonderful town. It's the it's the same distance as East Aurora, just a different direction from the city center. But a lot less expensive. And actually, Alden's kind of neat because it's shorter distance to Rochester, whereas if you're in East Aurora, it's not. Yeah, so understanding your timelines and when it's ready for you to buy, it's going to probably take you a little longer than you thought it was. So if you think, you know, you're just starting the process, well, you may be way almost too late for the process because it's going to take you time. I mean, really, craziness. All right, we're winding our show down. We've got about 2 minutes left, 2.5 minutes or whatever. And what else? What else do you want to talk about? How about next week? If you didn't get on tonight, it looks like you're not going to get on today, then call us next week. And you could be a guest on our show. Actually, if you'd like to really be a guest on our show, you could take up the whole half hour with us. We could sit down, and you could be our only guest. How's that? It's probably be provided that you have something interesting to say. Because Brendan Cunningham from Husfar Real Estate, as far as I know, is not just going to let you come on here and talk about gibberish. No. You got to talk about the things that are cool and recent. And by the way, something coming up really, really soon. I can't wait. The Albrecht Knox Gallery is going to reopen. Oh, my gosh. Can't wait. World class. This is huge. Just huge for us. And we're heading into our nicest part of the year. Memorial Day weekend is – when I was on Long Island long ago, Memorial Day was your first beach weekend. You went to the beach. Whether you wanted to or not, you went to the beach. Here, we don't go to the beach so much as we just have our cookouts. But we do have street festivals every other week. I think we have like 16 weeks worth of street festivals, from the Lewiston Smelt Convention to the Toy Town Convention. But, I think it's going to be 80 degrees today. I may have to put the top down right around my little rag top. So join us next week. We'll talk about some things that you think are cool about real estate or you think that are not cool about real estate, some things that are not cool. Inflation is not cool, but we're going to deal with it. Interest rates are not cool, but we're going to deal with it. Limited inventory is not cool, but we deal with it on a regular basis. And you know what? The best part about my job is I do continue to help people find the American dream, which is what Memorial Day is really all about. It's helping people realize the American dream, helping people sustain the American dream, and owning a piece of the action. The pursuit of happiness is based on owning real estate. So that being said, I want to say thank you for joining us this afternoon and be of good cheer. Thank a veteran. Shake the hands of a first responder and give a good strong thumbs up to the police and firemen, the firefighters out there that keep us safe and help us stay strong. Stay strong. Brendan Cunningham saying, see you next time.
So which button do I push?
When I'm ready to go?
When you're ready, you just scroll up and hit record. Or is it that one?
Okay, hit record and I'm in business.
Yeah.
And then when I'm finished, hit record again and it stops?
Yes.
Yeah, it'll
YouTube for you. We also have a new transcriber app on there that we're going to try out for the first meeting. So,
what does that mean? What is a transcriber? What does that
mean? It'll transcribe everything you say, and then we'll be able to use that and put it into like ChatGPT, and we'll have a summarization. We'll get notes.
Wow.
Yeah, it should be pretty cool. So, these are all new things we're trying and near the guinea pig.
Oh my God. And then you put the little thing about having people do the recruiting thing.
Yes, the
whenever you want me, let me know. Yeah.
Tell
me what day and I'll dress accordingly.
Okay.
Get the right costume then.
Yeah, whenever you want, really. I was seeing what kind of feedback we got from it, and then kind of plan it out from there.
Okay.
I'd like to get.
Did anyone respond yet?
Not that. Come
through
like
Canon
Delete or whatever.
Okay. Yeah, I saw it and I said, well, I'll talk to you about it. So.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So I think a lot of people will probably take that approach. And
yeah. They know they're going to see you. How many people are you looking to get in there?
I'd like to get 5 or 6 just so there's some variety in the answers.
And how long a thing is it going to be? Like 3 minutes?
I think you did it before with 716. And
yeah. Yeah. That was good. It was
we're
going
to try to make it quicker than that.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
All right, so Chan. Okay, beautiful. All right, we're going to go with record.
This meeting is being recorded.
All right, good afternoon. And how are my friends in 716 land? Brandon Cunningham here. We're going to talk about navigating the choppy waters from contract to closing, from the home inspection to the final inspection. All right, we've been talking about a lot of things in the last couple of weeks and months, and with our coaching sessions, we've been talking about some things that have to do with the very words that you use. Scripts. They say this, you say that. Now, having said that, a couple of rules of thumb. I'm really big on rules of thumb. Rule of thumb. Person asking the questions is the person in control of the conversation and the transaction and the entire ball of wax. So typically what happens is there's a flip where the buyer or the seller is asking a million questions and you're answering the questions and you're sort of covering up and covering up and covering up because you're in the wrong position. You should be asking the questions. And one of the things we've learned about is the best questions to be asking are what they call those open-ended questions or the open-ended questions. Those are the questions that typically begin with the W sound. Why, when, where. A lot of times when you don't know what to say, if you just purse your lips and you say that W, you'll be able to jumpstart your brain. You'll come up with something. Okay? What made you think about buying this house in the first place? When did you first start looking? Let me ask you, when you first started looking, did you find any houses that you liked? Did you put any offers in on this? Now, by stacking up my questions, I can't get a yes or a no. They've got to sort of figure which torpedo is going to hit them first. So the moral of the story is the person asking the question is, generally speaking, the person that wins, and you're doing a better job because you're not acting as a real estate agent or a realtor. You're acting like a professional, like a consultant. The doctor asks a million questions. The attorney asks a million questions. And after they're finished, you know what they do? They ask more questions because they're the person that will always be in control. Rule of thumb, attorneys. When they put somebody on the stand, they never, if they're good attorneys, they never ask a question unless they know what the answer is going to be. Sometimes they call it leading the witness. It's okay to lead the witness sometimes. You don't want to have any surprises and wow, I never expect them to say that. Now, with all of that being said, one of the things that happens is whether it's Joel or Brittany or Amy or myself, we get asked questions a lot. And what's amazing about the questions that we get asked, we get to ask the same questions over and over and over again. Buyers, I know, you know, every transaction is a little different. Every seller will say, oh, my house is very different. 99% of the questions have already been asked. And for that 1% of the questions that hasn't been asked, you know, there's an answer to that. And the answer to that is probably not all that important. Because here's another rule of thumb. It really doesn't make much difference what the answer to the question is. If you're the agent, it's how you answer the question. How is so much more important than the what. Okay? Sometimes you can give a flip answer, which is the right answer, because it serves the purpose. Now, all of that being said, we have a number of tools that we give you. If you don't use the tools, I can guarantee you they're not going to work. But if you use the tools, they start to work better and better and better and more, and you become more and more effective as time goes by. One of the things we're talking about in our coaching session is you need to practice the scripts. You need to practice. You need to do it with other people. You need to go back and forth, back and forth. It's the only way that you get better. It's the only way. I wish there was a shortcut up the mountain, but there isn't. We can give you the tools to get up the mountain. We can give you the right Sherpas to carry your baggage and stuff like that. But ultimately, you've got to climb the mountain. You've got to do it for yourself. And if you're not willing to do that, you're going to have a tough time in the real estate business. Now, wouldn't it be great if you knew what questions they were going to ask you before they answered them? Well, guess what? You do. We already know the questions that they're going to ask you. There's only so many scenarios that are out there. They're looking to buy, so they're going to have buyer's questions. They're looking to sell, they're going to have seller's questions. They fall into different categories. The
questions that they're going to give you are written down for you. Okay? Let's show you where some of these questions are written down. Now, I happen to love this. I'm a big exponent of this, proponent of this. You can buy one of these things, $50. You look like a friggin' hero with it. But it's got all your presentation manuals. That's all the tools that you could ever use. I've added a few tools, and I'm going to show you what some of those tools are as we go through. But let's talk about some of the questions that you're going to get asked. Now, I'm in the handy-dandy seller's guide right now. One of the things that's in here is 18 questions to ask a real estate agent, a realtor. By the way, here's the buyer's guide. We're going to take a look at that in a little bit, too. But here's 18 questions to ask a realtor, and then I go to the next page over here, and it has, wait a minute, top 10 questions that buyers ask that can affect the sale. So you got questions about buyers and sellers, and they're all in here. What's interesting is the buyer's questions are in the seller's book, because maybe the buyer might want to know the answer to this, what the questions that the seller is going to ask, and maybe the seller might want to know, have the answer to the questions that the buyer is going to ask. So let's look at some of the questions that the seller might want to know what the buyer is going to say. Ask. Okay. Questions that the buyer is going to ask in this wonderful handy-dandy briefcase here. What's the price? What's the price of the house? Okay. Something that I do, I use a very old-fashioned tool because it's very powerful and very effective, and there are certain things that, you know, with all the technology out there, sometimes the old stuff works as well. I don't need an electric car right now. I just need a car to get me where I need to get to. I can get stuff on here. I can get questions and information on here. That's great. But you know what? No substitute for this wonderful little thing that I have right here, a clipboard. When somebody wants to know about the price, I'm going to head them off. I know they're going to probably want to ask me the price. Whenever somebody's going to be looking at a house with me, you do what you want, figure a way to do this, I'm going to actually print out the realtor-friendly version of the listing so that they can have it in front of them. And I'm going to hand this to them with the pen I set here. Because, by the way, there's a little sheet in your library that talks about open houses and a checklist. I will attach that to the ML printout as well, because I said go through and check off what's important, what's not, because it talks about things like location, condition, price. It's got all those things in there. You can check if price was good, price was bad. Check it off, 1 to 10 scale. But I give them this because, A, it makes me look like I'm a consultant. B, I hand it to them because I want them to stay busy, okay? And I don't want them asking me questions where they could just get the answer by looking on the sheet. I look better when I can get them the answer faster than they can think of it. So, what's the price of that? It's on the sheet. I don't say it's on the sheet. I'll say, okay, you can see it's right up there. Then they may ask me about the assessor. I say, oh, yeah, it's over there. And then we can both look at it together. But either way, now we can share notes. It's like I'm letting them look behind the curtain. Seinfeld, they did a whole routine about checking the chart. Ooh, can I check the chart? I'm going to let them handle the chart. Now, I'm going to use this chart when we go through the final walkthrough. But for looking at a house, I'm going to let them use the chart with the printout. What's the price of the house? Why is that important? Well, because they want to make sure you're in the right range. How long has the house been on the market? That's a question that people will ask all the time. Here's the question that you should ask yourself on any one of these questions. Why are they asking me this question? By the way, if you haven't gone through these, shame on you, because these are the questions they're going to ask you. Now, there's two ways to do this. One, you can wait for the question to come up and not have any clue how to answer the question and just wing it. Or you can go through the questions in your head, write some answers down that you might want to use so that eventually the answers flow that much better. One of the questions that they asked in the coaching sessions, so how's the market? We hear it all the time. You know what? You can come up with a stupid answer. You can come up with a pat answer. You can come up with any answer you want, but you know that question is going to come up. So wouldn't it be better to have some sort of a question, an answer to the question in advance, so it actually looks like you're thinking about the question? You know what? How's the market? You know, that's a really, really good question. And you know what? Thank you for asking. But I have to say, the real estate market is complicated. It has a lot of moving parts to it. Which part of the real estate market were you most interested in, the buy side or the sell side? Pretty much verbatim the way we learned it, but I made it look like it was a conversation. The answers to your questions should be conversational. Okay? It shouldn't be like you're reading off the script. But push comes to shove, if you're reading off the script, it's not the worst thing in the world. Just try to make it look conversational. One of my favorite movies, might be one of your favorite movies, is The Godfather. Some of you may be aware that Marlon Brando was a royal pain in the ass to work with, and in fact, he worked from cue cards exclusively, because in his mind, for him to memorize the line robbed him of spontaneity. It's nonsense, okay? But at any rate, there's actually scenes where you can see Robert Duvall. He's got his shirt open while the camera is shooting Robert Duvall from the back. He's got his shirt, and he's got Marlon Brando's lines on his stomach, and he's reading them. Oh, never take sides against the family. You know, he's reading them, right? It's going like this. You can do that. It's just, you know, it's not the recommended way to do it. So if somebody's going to ask you, what's the price? What's the probability of them asking the question? Like 100%. What's the probability of them saying how long has the house been on the market? You know what? They might ask that question, but you want to know why. Why do you think they're asking you that question? I think they're asking you the question, but I don't know for sure. But I might say, since it's a good question, I'm just curious why you're asking them. Well, I'm just curious. My favorite answer to that question, and I've answered it in other sessions, is, you know what? Thank you. It's a really good question. They need to free up some of their equity. Now, what other questions do you have? They don't know what the hell that means, but I answered the question. I made it sound like really scary. But either way, I answered the question. And I gave them my answer, and I didn't have to think about it, because the last thing that you ever want to do is grow the beard and have to keep stroking the beard because you don't know the answer to the question because you haven't gone through it before. How old is the roof? How old is the furniture? Are the appliances included? What are the taxes? These are questions you know they're going to ask you at some point. So it'd be nice if you had some sort of working basis to answer those questions before you got there. Why are they selling? They need to free up their equity. Oh, did they die in the house? No, they're in the next room. They're dead. We didn't bury them. I think that's so fun. Did they die in the house? That's the actual question. That's a whole other story. But either way, you should know the questions that they're going to ask before you get there. Common sense. You know, when the doctors are doing the operation, it's even when they've done their first appendectomy, chances are they have sat in and they've done scores of appendectomy surgery where they just helped. They stitched the person up. Maybe they made the first incision. Maybe they helped with the anesthesia. They did. But the point is, by the time they actually do the operation, they've gone through these questions a million times, or a lot. Okay. So 10 questions that a buyer can ask. They're all here. Ask the questions yourself in your head before you get there so that you don't look like a dummy. Here, 18 questions to ask your real estate. Now, what's interesting about the 18 questions, this is on the sell side, is a lot of these questions are actually directed at the agent, and some of the questions are directed at the market. You should be able to answer both of those questions without saying, gee, I don't know. If it's really important, I can check with you. That's a stupid answer. It's a bad answer. Can you imagine you're on the table there, and the doctor says, well, gee, I've never seen one of these before. Let me go back to my office so that I can look this up. That's not a thing. That's not how it works. You're expected to know the answers like that. The only way you can know the answers like that is you got to know the questions beforehand. You got to go through them. If they say this, you can say this. If you've never heard the question before and they say this, you don't know what you're going to be doing. Okay, but here's some questions. Ask why, in your head, they're asking you this question. Do you work full-time or part-time as a real estate agent? It's the number one question that they have on there. Why are they asking you that question? Well, we could surmise. You could say, gee, I'm curious why you asked that question. You could. But chances are they're asking that question why. Well, because they want to make sure that you're credible. Now, I'm going to say something, and it might be a little controversial, but generally speaking, part-time is not as good as full-time, generally speaking, in anything. I want you to think about this, Ed. If you needed an attorney to represent you, would you look for a part-time attorney? The answer to that has got to be 100% no. I mean, if you happen to get a part-time attorney, you might want to suffer through, but you wouldn't seek it out. Here they're asking you right up front, are you part-time or full-time? And I can remember when I first got in the real estate business, well, I was in the business for about 2 years and I was taking my broker's course at the Roosevelt Hotel, which is where they're putting all the immigrants in New York City right now. The broker that was teaching class says, how many of you started part-time? And I said, I raised my hand. There's about 200 people in the class. And there were two other people that raised their hands. And they said, you had your hand up. I put my hand down right away. And he says, you started part-time? I said, yeah. And he says, wow. He says, I've been teaching this class for 5 years. I've never had anyone that made it this far. Because typically what happens when you're part-time is you weed yourself out. It's just reality. I can't change the reality. We can dance around the reality and say that that's not what it is, but that's what it is. So they want to know if you're the guy for the job. So if you are part-time, you may want to figure out a better answer than say, yep, I'm part-time. I do this like 2 hours a week. That's not a good answer. If you're with a team, you can buffer the answer and say, you know what? I am, but I work with a team. I work with the Blue Ribbon team. I work with this team. I work with that team. And together we are a very, very effective force. And let me tell you why. Now you've pivoted and you're answering the question to get you back to the point where you're reestablishing credibility. That's why they're asking that. Why then? They want to make sure you are the right person for the job. Now the next questions, what's your average days on market? What's your listing price to sale ratio? How many times do you get multiple offers? These are really questions that cross over into what the market is, multiple, how many properties are getting with multiple offers. More specifically, they're asking how many times you do it. Understand the question and make sure you have the right answer for it. What's your close rate? How many listings expire? How long have you been in the business? How long have you been in the business? Why are they asking that? They want to check your credibility. A person that's been in the business for 10 years, in theory, should be more credible than a person that's been in business for 10 minutes or 10 weeks or 10 months. I was out walking my dog with my daughter who just got a dog, and the dog is 10 months old, a little rescue puppy. I have to tell you, I'm amazed at what this dog can do. It's just a natural. It knows how to walk. It's much better than my dog. My dog's a goofy. This dog is very subtle, and if I didn't know any better, I would have thought that the dog was not 10 months old. I would have thought that the dog was at least 5 or 6 years old and a mature dog, because it behaved as such. But I asked the question before I even saw it, how old is the dog? Because I wanted to know what to expect. And with puppies, you know, one of my favorite expressions about Goldens and all retrievers is they go through two stages, puppy and old age. There's nothing in the middle. They're goofy, and then they're goofy at the end. But they're just older and goofy. Other questions that come up, how much business do you do? If you're brand new, you don't do it, but your team, okay? And if you're not on a team, you have the Husfar team. The Husfar team, I mean, we're doing 800 deals a year at this point. I don't even know how many deals we're doing there, but the point is, I should know. See that? Caught myself. Okay, you need to stay current with this stuff. I went on the library this morning. I was looking for a different kind of form that I wanted to talk about, and I found another form. So you need to check your materials and check your resources on a relative basis, because there may be things that you didn't know existed. I think this is an interesting question. It's in here, and you might got to ask this question. Do you have a professional photographer to take photographs? Well, the answer for me is absolutely yes. The next question is, what kind of a camera and equipment do you have? They may ask that, and the answer to that is, I don't have a camera other than what's on this freaking phone here, and I'm not all that good with the phone. That's why I use a professional photographer. Using a professional photographer puts you in a whole different category. This question, it's interesting, they put these questions in here not necessarily in any logical pattern, because sometimes the questions aren't in a logical pattern. If you have a professional photographer, why do I need to know if you have equipment? But they still ask, so you need to know the answers to the questions. And again, it's not the answer to the question so much as it's how I answer the question. But yeah, I do this because like most people, they're not all that good at this. If they have a professional photographer, they're a lot better than the guy that doesn't have a professional photographer and that shows up. Oh, yeah, we're going to do that. They're going to put the unprofessional fire. He's the guy that puts, he puts the fire in the fireplace, which I can't do on here. Maybe you can. I don't know. But I'm not, I don't want to learn. It's not something that I need to know. Do you use insecticide? Will contracts be done electronically? This thing's almost becoming dated at this point because I think pretty much 90% of all the contracts are done electronically. I could be wrong. Some people could be writing them by hand. But you know what? Some of the old timers I know still do write by hand. And chances are, if you're selling a big expensive house where the owner's lived in it for 20 or 30 years, the last time they did, when they bought that house, they probably did it by hand. So that question could come up. What will you do differently to market my house? If you don't know, check this book. There's a gazillion answers to that question. But again, don't get caught short by having them ask you the question and then you don't know the answer because you haven't gone over it in your own head or your own mind or on paper or with somebody else, which is even better. We learn so much from each other if we allow ourselves to. But you have to put yourself out there. And you know, and you have to be willing to make mistakes. One of the things that I do in my extracurricular life is I teach Tai Chi. And one of the things I always remind the students is, because here's a question that will come up a lot when you teach Tai Chi. Can I get like a video on this? Do they have some tapes? And I said, yeah, there's a million tapes that are out there. And I said, do yourself a favor. Don't get any. Don't buy any. And they'll say, well, why is that? I said, because here's the deal. You will watch the tape or the video, and the video is doing Tai Chi. You are not. Okay? It's as simple as that. The only way you can learn how to do this is you have to do it. The postures and the form. And by the way, unless you do it wrong, you cannot do it right. Everyone has to do it incorrectly first. Now, if they get it right the first time, more power to them. But they don't typically get it right the first time. The hand is curved. Instead of this way, it's supposed to be this way. Either way, the point is you have to practice to make it work. And this whole thing about how to get the Carnegie Hall, practice, 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 we get that. But Tai Chi is especially relevant to what we do because you cannot get better unless you do it wrong. It's the only way you can do it. And we all do it incorrectly, and we do it incorrectly a lot and bad so that somebody can modify and just push us this, just tweak, just turn your wrist a little bit this way and then you'll have it. So little changes, but it all has to do with repetition, and practice. When is the first open house? How many? And will you be there? It's interesting, they broke it down into three positions because in the olden days, it was just presumed that if you were going to do an open house, you do it when you wanted to and that you would do it yourself. You wouldn't farm it out to somebody else. Nowadays, with agents that get busy, they'll farm it out to team members. They'll farm it out to members in the office. They'll farm it out to anybody they can that will want to do the open house because they think that their time might be actually spent more profitably showing somebody else out. Whether that's true or not is really beside the point. The point of the exercise is not everyone does their own open house anymore. That's why that question is there. Sometimes people say, yes, I will be there. Yes, nothing will lie. But I'll have one of my assistants there. Yes, nothing will lie. Be there, but I'll have whatever. But know that the question could come up and know that you need to have an answer. And by the way, the best answer is an answer that's ready to go, where you didn't have to say, let me look it up. I know it's here somewhere. Oh, wait, I'll be right with you. Did I move that page? That's not a good answer. You look like an idiot when you do that. So get used to understanding what questions could come up and what questions will come up and what questions you will need to have an answer for like that. Do you have a list of contractors? Great question. This is probably one of those underutilized resources that we have because you can go right to our library and get the list of contractors. If you're working with a contractor, a buyer, seller, that, you know, I don't know, he does basements or something. Say, by the way, what a great thing. If he does basements, say, you know what, I'm hoping that not only we can do business with it, but I'm hoping that I can recommend you and add you to our contractors list. Oh, wow, this is really there. I should pop open a little bit like that. Everyone should want to get on your contractors list. And it's a great resource for you. If you can add 30 contractors to your list this year for differences, and you should look to do this all the time, I'm going to tell you, of the 30, probably at least three of them are going to have buyers or sellers or friends of theirs that will be looking to buy or sell for you. So you're just doing your job, and you're going to pick up business as a result. Yeah. It was how I got 90% of my business when I first got into business. I had a contractor's list. People that did the drywall, they wound up buying houses from me, and they wound up buying houses so they could flip and they could renovate. Here's a question. Do you have a resume? I don't have a formal resume, but what I do have is I have my bio, and I use that as my resume, and it's right on my webpage, and that's where I direct people to. Now, if I need something more formal than that, I'm fortunate because I can give them one of my books. That's a resume. Shelley Winters, an actor from years ago, not my favorites, by the way, but she had two Oscars, and at one point, she was asked to do a role in another movie, and the director and the casting asked her to audition, and which at a certain point becomes almost insulting, I mean, because they know your work. At this point, she had already had two Oscars. Two. There's not many of the people that have two. There's a lot of people that never got any. Richard Burton never got any. Got nominated a few times, but never got an Oscar. And she showed up at the interview, and they asked her for a resume. And they said, asked for a resume and a headshot. This is two Oscars, right? And before she started dropping the F-bombs, which we don't recommend you do, she took the first Oscar and she says, this is my headshot. And then she took the second one out and she says, this is my resume. Do you have any other questions? End of story. She got cast. But it's like, if you don't have a resume, the reason why they're asking one is they want to establish your credibility. Even if they never look at it, and that's typically what happens when you have a resume. If you give it to them, they're going to look at it for 2 seconds. And I direct them to go to my webpage. And then while they're there, I'll direct them to go to the blog. And that it also enhances my own credibility. But it's a question that's going to come up at some point. Have a better answer than, gee, I don't know. I mean, should I have a resume? Do I need one? You may never need one. Now, sometimes you need one, sometimes you don't. There's an expression that I think originated with the mountain men back in the old 1800s. Because when they would go out up into Oregon and Utah and all the mountains out there in the Rocky Mountains there, there's a lot of wild animals up there. Even if they were going to help hunt elk, there might be mountain lions, pumas, catamounts. But more specifically, the big one that they were afraid of was bears. I mean, you get up close with a grizzly bear, it may not be a good thing. I mean, they can run fast. There's all the things about don't run because they're faster than you. Don't run uphill because they can run fast uphill. Don't run downhill because they can run faster downhill. They can climb trees. They can do all sorts of things. So when you go out hunting for elk, you do what they call going loaded for bear. You may never need the big gun to shoot the bear. And I'm not a hunter, so I don't want to shoot anything. But you want to be ready for the bear, okay? Even if you never need to have the resume, you want to know that you have some sort of research to get the resume. Makes sense? Let's talk about some of the questions that come up when you get to the stage where you now have a inspection, which in the beginning of the contract. We talked a little bit about this in several of the sessions, but this thing called future pacing. Future pacing is a magical thing, magical skill set to learn. That's where you take somebody from wherever they are, but let's say from contract to closing, say, this is what's going to happen. I call it a two-minute drill for you and me. I don't necessarily call it a two-minute drill for them. Okay. Let me tell you what's going to happen. And I walked into the process. I said, all right, we're going to put in an offer. Hopefully they accept your offer. They accept your offer. Then what's going to happen is because you've asked for a home inspection, we will schedule a home inspection within a couple of days and get it done. 3 days, the inspector goes in. He looks at certain things. Home inspections are not pass-fail, okay? Do you like the house based on the condition that you see it's in? Normal wear and tear provided, okay? This is what the home inspection is not for. It is not to give them a laundry list of repairs. If you think that's what you're going to do, then we're really kind of barking up the wrong tree. It's to see if you like the house based on the condition, normal wear and tear provided. One of the things the inspector will give you is sort of a checklist of things to look at for repairs down the road. The roof is okay, but, you know, you're probably going to need to replace it 10, 15 years down the road, things like that. You don't have to replace it 10, 15 minutes down the road. So after he does the inspection, what will happen is, presuming that you like the property, you're going to sign off that you like the property, and at that point, you go and we send it off to the attorney. They bless the contract. They have 3 business days to do that. Once that happens, then you apply for your mortgage. Once you apply for your mortgage, the bank goes in there, checks your credits, does all that. Just a couple weeks later, a guy comes out from the bank that you have paid for. He's called an appraiser. He's going to do the appraisal on the property, make sure that it's worth what you're paying, so that the bank, since there's a mortgage involved, so that the bank can sleep at night and know that they're not giving you more money than you should be getting for this house. After that happens, what's going to happen, hopefully, is you're going to get a letter from the bank, and it's called, congratulations, we're issuing you a letter of commitment. There will always be conditions. When you get that letter, make sure you tell me about it, unless they've told me directly. There's going to be things on that list. We're going to go over the things on the list. Some of the things you will have already done. One of the conditions that they're going to have is that you actually have a contract of sale. Well, here's the contract of sale. They're going to ask, did you have an appraisal? Well, yeah, of course. So some of the things are going to be already checked off on. And then once that happens and you send the signed letter back to the bank, once that happens, at some point you're going to get what they call a clear to close from the underwriter. Once you get the clear to close from the underwriter, the attorneys will scurry around and they will figure an actual closing date that's close to the closing date that we put on the contract. Remember, the closing date on the contract is not the actual date. It's just the target date, the pregnancy date. That's the date we're going to sort of say, get close to that. And then we're going to go and we're going to schedule what they call a final walkthrough. That's the opportunity to go through and just take a look at that. Make sure it's still there. A normal wear and tear provided. Yes, it's supposed to be broom clean, but, you know, sometimes if it's not, we can work around that. But that's pretty much what happens from contract to closing. That took about 2.5 minutes to do. Okay? And I did the long-winded version. Okay, now when we go and we do the actual inspection, I've set the stage. The thing that I've said is it's not an opportunity to go and nitpick the property. It's not an opportunity to go in and come up with a laundry list of repairs. Oh, and by the way, something I did say when I gave them my future pacing speech, the home inspection is really for the principals, the buyers that are buying the house. It's not for their family and friends. If you're on the contract, that's how you keep 12 people from going to the home inspection. You don't want to have a lot of people at a home inspection. It should be, you know, if it's a husband and wife that's buying out, that's who should be there. Okay? Oh, by the way, if there's a home inspection and the buyers don't show up and they're just relying on the report, you can pretty much kiss that deal goodbye. You should also, if you are a buyer's agent, you should be there for that inspection. Not because you're going to tell the inspector what to do, but you can sort of set the stage. You're going to reinforce what the stage is. It's not to come up with this laundry list when they start getting a little weird on it. Sometimes they get weird. We don't want them getting weird. We want to control the environment. So when they start asking questions about the home, in theory, you should know what those questions are before you get there, and you should know what some of the answers are. And remember, it really isn't a question of what the answers are. It's how you say the answers. You're the person that, you know, everything's fine, and you're a person that's a controlled person. You're going to be fine. But if you're a person that wigs out all the time, oh, my God, this is terrible. The roof is falling down. If you're going to be a fire fanner, not a good thing. There's two elements that you need to understand in the wonderful world of real estate, logic and emotion. When logic works, you stick with logic. When emotion works, you stick with emotion, but you don't cross them over. Okay? When logic is where we're at, you don't go with emotion because that's not going to work. Typically what happens is if you're on the sales side, meaning the list side, you tend to be more logical. Okay? When you're on the buy side, you tend to be a little more emotional and say, wow, look at that view. That view's incredible. Oh, my God. You would never do that on the list side. Because when you say, oh, my God, look at that view, listing agent, well, that just means the price of the house. The price of the house just went up $20,000. by pointing out with emotion to the buyer, I'm creating a greater sense of desire for the property. So logic tends to be on the list side, emotion tends to be on the buy side. Now, when emotion starts getting into both sides, that's when you have a problem. When the agent becomes emotional, that's when you have the biggest problem, which is why I typically say the biggest problem in just about any real estate transaction is probably the other agent, because they're probably creating problems that they don't need to. They're probably fanning the flames of fires that they started. And I don't know why they want to do that, because it doesn't make anyone happier and doesn't get them to close. I figure that once I get something past the home inspection, I have a deal. I've never not closed on a transaction that I got past the home inspection, because I've set the stage. It's not that they're going to get buyer's remorse. It's not that they're going to get seller's remorse. It's all the conditions are in place at that point. Now, there's a home inspection and they change their mind at the home, well, I never had anything to begin with. You know, a lot of times, oh my God, I blew a deal. No, you never had a deal. Once you get past the home inspection, you have a deal. Now, should you ever be in a situation where you have a mortgage contingency and they don't get a mortgage, really shouldn't happen, because if they run the credit, chances are, with very few extenuating circumstances, they're going to get a mortgage commitment letter and they're going to close on the property and happily ever after. What could happen? They physically could die. They could lose their jobs. They could do all this things like that. It's never happening. Because I make sure that they, there was a certain element of luck there, because no one lost their jobs. But I've seen other agents that really had to scurry around because, A, they didn't future-pace the thing, and, of course, they didn't tell people, especially on the buy side, now, whatever you do, don't buy anything. Anything. Nothing. Don't charge groceries on your credit card. Don't do anything. Don't buy rings or opening accounts at Target. And don't be doing any of that stuff. Don't use any credit until you close. After you close, buy whatever you want. We've heard recently that somebody, they just went out and they bought a whole bunch of furniture on credit before they closed. Well, that kicked them out of the thing. Now they got the furniture, but they can't close on the house because they're not getting the house. So, questions. The questions are here. Understand what questions they're going to be asking you, and understand the answers to those questions before they ask you. There are no scenarios that are out there where we haven't been asked the questions. You know? On every different scenario, for sale by owners, there's a series of questions they're going to ask you. On expired, there's a series of questions they're going to ask you. Know the answers to the questions before they come up. It's not hard. But by the way, you do have to practice questions and the answers. And say, okay, if they say this, I'm going to say this. If they say this, I'm going to say that. And you do it in such a way so that it, even though it may look like you're thinking, it doesn't look like you're struggling to think. Oh, my God, I don't have a clue here. No, that's not good. So the rockiest of shoals that are out there for you to navigate around can be handled if you're a good sailor. What's interesting is every sailor learns this, and I took sailing a couple of years ago. We're all at the mercy of the weather. We are all at the mercy of the market. However, it's interesting that regardless of whatever the market conditions are, some agents just seem to do better. It's interesting that regardless of the weather conditions, some sailors just seem to sail better. Why? Because they've got the skills. They spent the time studying the winds. They spent the time studying the currents and the ponds and the shoals and the high water tables, the tide tables, I should say. Something that is just a given in any industry, in any sports, in any, pretty much anything you can think of, generally speaking, the people that get paid the most are the people that have the greatest skill sets. If you are the number one cardiologist in Buffalo, it's reasonable to presume that you're going to make more than the number one student that just graduated Harvard Medical School. Because as good as that, as smart as that young man is or young woman is that just got out, they haven't haven't done the operation a million times. They haven't developed that skill set yet. Reasonable presumption. It's reasonable to presume that Josh Allen is going to make more than the number one draft pick for quarterback this year. Why? Because he's a proven commodity. Now, I said people with the highest skill sets tend to get paid the most, but there's some glitches in there too. I read something recently where Mahomes, who was the Super Bowl winner, and he's a kind of funny guy, he's got a funny walk, but he's a really good quarterback. In fact, one might even argue that he might be a better quarterback than Josh Allen. He might be, maybe he's not, I don't know. But one thing is for sure, Josh Allen's making about $30 million a year more than the other guy is, or $30 million more on his contract than the other guy is, and there's a discrepancy there. Either way, though, both of those quarterbacks, they're top of the game. They're making big money. They're making much bigger money than somebody that's just starting out because they have better skill sets. And then what happens is typically is at different points in their career, they may get paid a little bit less. It's interesting that, and I hate to use sports analogies because some people are not sports-minded, but Aaron Rodgers is now playing. I mean, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame for sure. He's a Hall of Fame quality football player. But now he's playing for the Jets. And you know what? How many more years will he play for the Jets? Well, one or two. I don't think he's got a five-year lifespan left on him. But they can get him for a few cents less than they could have 10 years ago. Because he's sort of tapering off to the end of his career. And his skill set is not quite as sharp as, because they're physical. Now, we don't need physical skill sets in the real estate business. Typically speaking, we don't. But we do need to have mental and emotional skill sets. I used to tell people, listen, here's the deal. You can sell real estate until you're like 100 years old if you wanted to. I think the oldest guy that I ever saw that was active in the real estate business was about 94. And he actually used to show houses. But I used to say, you know, you can do this forever. In fact, I used to tell people, as long as you can do the stairs, you can sell real estate. And then I found out that that wasn't true because I had an agent who, for lack of a better term, she didn't take really physically good care of herself. And she has shown houses a lot in the last 20 years, but I don't think she's done the stairs for at least the last 15 or 20 years. And typically what she does is when somebody wants to go up to the bedrooms upstairs, because that's in